reach for it, but never hoped to stop it.
"He's been having problems at night," Wolfric said.
He gestured to his crotch.
"You know, controlling his bladder. I've tried to help him, gather his sheets for the laundry, getting him clean nightclothes. But I thought you should know."
It wasn't shame, Helmuth felt, as he stared on, his gaze swapping between his brother and father and back again. It was resignation. In his world, there was no truth but that which Wolfric created. This battle was of words, his against his brother's, and that was a duel he would lose every time. He was smarter than his brother, that much he knew, but not as conniving. So he said nothing, departing the cavernous room, ignoring the pitying way his father called his name, which echoed all around him as he left. He waited in his room all day, for someone to come. He knew Wolfric and Griswold wouldn't, nor would he want them to, but he expected his father to come. He didn't. He wished his mother was still alive, for she always had the right things to say. It was a foolish thought, for one could not speak to the dead, and no amount of wishing could raise them from frozen hell. But the most surprising of all was Zelda. He was certain by now she would have heard the news. His brothers weren't exactly known for discretion. He waited for her to barge into the room, righteous indignation spreading across her broad-jawed face, her dark eyes glittering with plans to get their revenge. But she didn't come, not as the shadows crept through the beveled windows, not as night fell and the moons rose and the stars filled the sky. Not as Helmuth spread out a scrap of parchment and wrote his note, his hot, angry tears splashing down on the edges, which curled in response as they dried. And not as he gathered as many things as he could carry on his back, and cast one final look at the room he would never see again. As he crouched down the hall, he wondered who would find the note. He wondered if they would laugh at the absurdity of it. He wondered if they would feel a shred of remorse. The words were etched in his mind now, a mantra he would not soon forget. "I will return one day, and I shall have my vengeance." Though he knew they were the words of an angry child, he gripped them like a weapon as he hobbled out into the night. 6 months later. Being a beggar and a cripple and a young boy had its benefits, especially in the bustling city of Blackstone. For one, Helmuth was practically invisible, too pathetic for anyone to make direct eye contact with. He was certain people were aware of his existence, and yet their eyes roamed past him as if he wasn't there. They did, however, see his upside-down hat, which received a good quantity of coins each day, though of small denominations. Something that surprised him the most, however, was that it wasn't the wealthiest citizens who stooped over to flip him a coin or two, but those barely above his own station. Some of them wore threadbare clothes and holy shoes, and yet they managed to part with coin that could have been saved to replace their old clothing. "How did I not know of such things?" Helmuth wondered. And, of course, the answer was obvious, because he'd lived the life of a prince in a castle. And I hated it. And I felt sorry for myself. And I ran away. Still, this life on the streets brought him so much more pleasure than his old life had. Until it didn't. In fact, Helmuth had long forgotten that hastily scrawled note written in anger. Vengeance was the last thing on his mind these days. On the streets, survival was the sole focus from dawn to dusk, where your next meal would come from, where you would shelter from the cold and wind. How you would protect yourself if those even more desperate than you tried to take what you had. And on and on. One night, these lessons were taught to Helmuth in the harshest of ways. It hadn't been a bad night, as far as the life of a beggar went. He'd scrounged enough coin to pay for a hot bowl of soup, served out the back of the tavern, of course, for with his dirty clothes and unkempt condition, he wouldn't be allowed through the front. And found a relatively warm, unoccupied nook in one of his favourite alleyways. He'd bedded down under scraps of parchment and promptly fell asleep. His dreams, as they often did, painted a picture of a boy that might have been him, sword-fighting, running and playing, climbing trees, whole,
unbroken, two good legs. The waking up from such dreams was hard. He'd grown used to it, and relished the escape from the reality of his body. On this occasion, however, he awoke to powerful hands dragging him off his feet, the pungent odor of garlic on the man's breath combining with the smell of oil on his armor. He tried to say something, to demand to know what was happening, but all that came out was a high-pitched squeak.
"By order of Lord Blackstone of House Blackstone, ruler and keeper of order in this great city, you are hereby arrested for sleeping on city property without authorization."
It was a mouthful, but the large man spoke the words in a bored monotone, like he'd said the same many times over, which, as it turned out, he had, on this very night. Helmer's first thought was, "What?" And his second was, "Why should the wealthiest man in the city, the Lord of Blackguard itself, care about a street urchin like me?" And Helmer's third thought was, "He knows who I am." Somehow his identity had been realized, despite all his efforts to change his appearance. Growing his hair long and purposely dirtying himself, and ripping his clothes long before the same occurred naturally. He would be taken back to Castle Hill. The thought made him want to die. Here he was no one, and no one had expectations for him. Expectations that he would never live up to. There, in the northern capital, he was a first-born prince without a crown, the maimed prince, a failure at life. There he was a joke. All his old feelings of anger and fear and sadness returned as he was dumped unceremoniously in the back of a wagon surrounded by iron bars. To his surprise, there were other boys like him, too, dirty and fearful, watching him with wide eyes and tight lips. He had been wrong, so wrong. No one knew he was Helmuth Gehrig. No one even seemed to care that he had a name. He was referred to only as Boy or You, and each time a command was given, 2 dozen boys would look up and look at each other and try to figure out who the guards were calling. Helmuth was given a task less strenuous than the others, who were charged with constructing buildings, mixing mortar. When the vat of sticky rice soup was first dumped next to him, his stomach growled. Then he learned he would be mixing it with sand and clay to create a thick mortar for the other boys to spread between stones. The soup looked less appetizing after that. After only the first night, his hands were raw from clenching the mixing rod, his muscles ached from the repetitive motion, and his head was spinning from lack of sleep. What was left of the sticky rice was breakfast, which they ate in the grey darkness that preceded dawn. No one spoke, the other boys equally exhausted, plopping down around the vat and using their fingers to shove the rice into their mouths. A ladle was passed around, and each boy got a sip of cold water. Before dawn arrived, the boys were ushered behind the very wall they'd constructed, huddling together. Just before the weariness took Helmuth, he realized why they were hidden. "So the other citizens don't know what they're doing to us." Day after day they slept, and night after night they toiled under moonlight. The walls grew larger and wider and greater in number as the structure began to take shape. It would be an immense building, almost like a miniature castle, and Helmuth knew for certain it would be for Lord Blackstone's own purposes, though no one told them anything. In fact, they weren't even allowed to talk, and one would swiftly earn the broadside of a sword if they dared to so much as whisper. Still, slowly, Helmuth began to learn the names and stories of the other boys, even if they were whispered in the spare moments before sleep overtook them after a long night of back-breaking work. There was Lodi, whose mother had died in childbirth and father had been a soldier killed in Raiders Pass, and Drake, who couldn't even remember his parents or what had happened to them, and Harry, who told stories about his childhood that could only be lies, though no one called him on it. According to him, his father was one of the wealthiest men in the realm, a great lord, but other lords had conspired against him and stolen everything out of jealousy. "One day he'll come back for me," he liked to say. No one had the heart to tell him what a load of bollocks that was. Dreams were not meant to be stolen. Helmuth talked little, preferring to listen, though he knew none would believe him either, even if he told them the truth about his life. As the months passed, Helmuth barely noticed the way the skin of his arms and chest tightened, the muscles bulging beneath. His hands grew stronger, too, thick with calloused layers that had formed after the blisters had broken and bled, the sting so painful he would sometimes cry out in his sleep, only to be silenced by a well-placed kick to the ribs. Each day, his anger grew. He was surprised to discover his own rage was not shared by the other boys, who seemed resigned to their fates.
"How can Lord Blackstone treat us this way? We are not paid for our labours. We barely receive enough sustenance to complete our tasks. He treats us like slaves."
He railed on and on, but all he received were blank stares in return.
"Why aren't you angry?" he asked them. "Don't you want justice?"
Eyebrows rose, mouths fell open. Finally, one of the boys, Lodi, said,
"There is no justice for us, because we don't exist."
How Helmuth longed to tell them the truth of who he was, how he could save them all, get them the justice they deserved. But that would mean going back to his father. And what guarantee was there that King Garrick would interfere in the affairs of Lord Blackstone? None. Not to mention the guards would never let him go, no matter what he said. They would laugh at him, their only response offered by a backhand to the cheek. More months passed, and they got to work on the roof. Helmuth was charged with cutting tiles, each of which needed to be the exact same shape. Not square, no, that would be too easy, but like the crests of waves. The other boys clambered over the structure, fitting each shingle into place. One night, Helmuth heard a strange scream, loud at first, but then tailing away, like a comet streaking out of sight. Another sound followed, which he could only describe as a thump. More sounds followed, the voices of the boys on the roof, but they were swiftly silenced by the barks of the guards. He was given his own reprimand, so he resumed his work. It was only later that he learned what had happened. Harry had slipped and fallen from the roof. He was dead. His wealthy father would never be able to come to save him now.
"This is a bad place,"
Helmuth thought, as he resumed work the next day. Blackstone, the North, the Four Kingdoms. Though he had never visited anywhere other than Castle Hill and Blackstone, he knew the rest of the lands were no better. There were slaves in Fanes, dragons in Calypso, rulers in Feria and Knight's End who, in their lust for power, sent their soldiers to the front lines to die. And for what? More land, control, so they could build monuments to themselves and bask in their own glory. It made Helmuth sick. Something rose in him, heat surging in his chest. He gasped, clutching at his own breast. Through his clothing he could see something, glowing darkly. Well, three somethings, like circles, only not perfectly round. Like raindrops. Or teardrops. One of the guards had noticed him now, and the fact that he'd stopped working. But Helmuth didn't care about his heavy footsteps, or the slight tensing of the man's leg as he prepared to kick him. He scrabbled at his ragged overcoat and the other layers beneath it, drawing them up, ignoring the wash of cold air that rushed over his skin, his eyes widening at what he saw. Three black teardrops, surrounded by red light, a stark contrast to the contours of his pale skin. A fog seemed to rise from the markings, swarming outward. The guard muttered, "What, the frozen hell?" And his foot dropped. Helmuth didn't know whether he'd seen the markings or just the strange fog, and he didn't really care because he felt good, whole, powerful, though he wasn't certain why.
"I can't go on like this," a voice said.
It took Helmuth a moment to realize who had spoken, that it was the guard. His voice so different now. Drained of all command, a withered thing that implied a sadness so complete it had brought him to his knees, his head tucked between his hands. Helmuth could only stare, watching as the fog spread, touching other guards, each of whom reacted immediately. Some fell to the ground, wailing. Others stood stock still, shaking their head, tears blooming from their eyes. On the roof, the other boys stopped what they were doing and stared. Helmuth, shocked and trembling, panicked, swatting at his own chest, the anger fading, which seemed to draw the heat with it. The fog dissipated first, and then the three black spots, along with their fiery rings of light. The guard, still on his knees, looked at him warily, his chest heaving.
"What are you?"
he said. Helmuth was disgusted with himself. It wasn't natural, not any of it. Not the black tears that appeared from nowhere, only to disappear moments later. Not the light and heat emanating from his skin. Not the fog that brought strong, full-grown men to their knees, causing them to sob like babies. He echoed the guard's question in his mind.
"What am I?"
The only answer that came to him was a monster, a crippled monster. Even now, the guards refused to go near him, watching from afar, whispering to each other. "They are deciding what to do with me. Would they kill him? If so, could he stop them?" Another, more pointed question arose. Should I stop them? After all, what did he have to live for? This life of labor, breaking his back for a lord who cared nothing for him, who didn't even know his name or where he came from. Now even the other boys wouldn't go near him, huddled together and staring just like their guards, hiding their own whispers behind cupped hands. "They fear me, too," he realized. "I am a cast-off amongst cast-offs. Shunned by my own family, shunned by my masters, shunned by the others like me." "No," he thought. "There are no others like me." He decided in that moment that if the guards came to kill him, he would not defend himself, not with his own hands or the strange power he felt lingering inside his chest. But they didn't come to kill him. No, he was sold instead, traded for coin like a possession. The Crimean ship was a beautiful vessel, its edges smooth and well sanded, its decks lacquered and free of salt stains. It wasn't just a Crimean ship, it was a royal ship. One of King Strait's own private vessels, used to transport the delicacies he bought in the Four Kingdoms. The sea breeze blew through Helmuth's hair, cold but not unpleasant, and he trailed a hand over the railing to feel the salt spray on his fingers. He didn't understand the turn of events that had landed him on this vessel, but for the first time in his life he felt like things might get better. Yes, he'd been purchased in a private sale between the guards and the Crimeans, but so far they hadn't put him to work, or abused him, or berated him. No, they'd cleaned him up, fed him, even provided new clothes, free of holes or ragged edges. Fine clothes, like the ones he used to wear in Castle Hill. Princely clothes. A snow-white shirt with billowing sleeves. A purple tunic hemmed with golden thread. For colder days, a thick greatcoat with furred cuffs and collar. Sturdy black trousers adorned with silver buttons used not for their utility, but for decoration. They were gaudy and wasteful, but Helmuth didn't care. Even his boots were soft leather, the craftsmanship the finest he had ever seen. The Crimean who had handed them to him had said they were made by a man named Swansea, a famous Western bootmaker who operated out of Knight's End. As he sat on a plush chair by the railing, he closed his eyes. And though it might have been Helmuth's imagination, he thought he felt the winds change slightly. A subtle change, but a powerful one. "I am finally going where I am meant to be going," he thought. As it turned out, it was true, but not in the way he believed. Though his time on the ship was new and exciting, eventually Helmuth grew bored of the endless days at sea. So he was overjoyed when the call of land finally arose from the scout in the bird's nest. His excitement only rose as the ship swept into port, the sails lowered, steered by long oars that sprouted from hatches in the sides like dozens of insect-like legs. The anchor was dropped, unfurling like a long, clanking snake, slithering beneath the water. The long pier approached, and rough-looking men waited, catching the ropes that were thrown from the decks by the sailors, tying them to iron posts. The ship juddered to a halt. Helmuth grabbed his crutches, which were also new, crafted from fine yew, painted a rich mahogany, and stitched with plush but firm pads that fit perfectly under his arms. One of the Crimeans helped him up the steps to the gangway, but he managed to cross the plank without assistance, though he felt wobbly and unbalanced. The problem wasn't his strength. No, his arms were stronger than ever. But the fact that the surface beneath him was no longer moving, even if it seemed like it was. The effect was one of unsteadiness, each step seeming to lean one way or the other. Still, it felt good to be back on solid ground, and there was plenty to distract him. Moray was the largest port city he had ever seen, at least 10 times the size of Blackstone, which Helmuth had thought was enormous. If the books were correct, it was the largest harbour in all the world, and Helmuth didn't doubt it for a second. Dozens of ships passed each other like giant monsters, trading positions on the piers. Hundreds of dock workers scuttled about, hauling cargo from the ships to carts and vice versa. The words he heard them speak, most of which were followed by hearty laughs, made him blush all the way to his ears. Everything smelled of salt and sweat and life. At the end of the pier, he was greeted by a boy. Though he looked as young as Helmuth, 13 or perhaps 14, Helmuth thought maybe he was older, considering the shadow of a shaven beard he could detect on the boy's cheeks and chin. His most obvious feature, however, was the colour of his skin. Red. Not dark, like blood, but as vibrant as sunset, the colour of a blush. Helmuth couldn't help himself. He stared openly. The boy laughed.
"You have never met a Terran, I take it?"
he asked. Helmuth shook his head dumbly, unable to formulate words.
A Terran?
Though he'd read of the people hailing from Terragon, a place of thick, humid jungles and vast flatlands, he always thought the descriptions of their skin colour were exaggerated. They were not. Helmuth thought this boy was the most beautiful person he'd ever seen.
"I am Vryn," the young man said. "I shall be your escort to Rockland."
He had a smooth voice, enunciating each syllable with such clarity, it almost made Helmuth unable to focus on the words themselves, and only the honey-rich sound of them. One, however, stood out. Rockland. It was a place of history and legend. The Crimean stronghold, where a long line of straight rulers had planned the conquering of the world. Supposedly there were few places the Crimeans didn't control, the Four Kingdoms being one of them, if only because the Crimean colonists had fought for their own independence.
A fat lot of good that did us, Helmuth thought.
He felt something pulse in his chest at his angry thoughts, and he quickly tempered them. Whatever force lay dormant inside him, he was determined to keep it there.
"Come, I shall show you the city," Vryn said.
Something occurred to Helmuth. Vryn's eyes had never left his during the exchange, not once darting to his withered legs or to the crutches supporting his weight.
"Don't you have any questions for me?" Helmuth asked.
The boy's eyes twinkled.
"Apologies. How was your voyage? You were comfortable, I hope?"
"Comfortable?"
Yes, very. It was long. I'm glad to be on land again."
Vryn laughed, the tone almost musical, seeming to match everything else about him perfectly.
"Good. Now, come. I have a carriage waiting."
"Thank you," Helmuth managed. Helmuth had often thought the spires of Castle Hill were the most amazing structures he'd ever seen, nearly piercing the clouds with their points. Sometimes he'd dreamed of climbing them, feeling the wind rushing over him as wings sprouted from his back. And then he would leap off, soaring over the northern capital as people stared. In that moment, his old nickname, the Maimed Prince, would melt like snow under the beat of a hot sun. Well, the structures of the city of Moray made Castle Hill look like a child's model constructed of twigs and paper. His neck hurt from leaning back to look up at where the buildings vanished, actually disappeared, into the thick blankets of clouds. It had to be 1,000 steps to the top.
"No," he thought, 10,000.
As the horse-drawn carriage bounced and bumped along, Vryn seemed to notice his incredulity.
"We have a system of weights and counterweights to reach the higher floors," he said. "Still, it's not for the faint of heart."
Something about his tone gave Helmuth pause.
"You've been up there?"
Vryn nodded.
"Every time I am here, I make a point of travelling to the top of the tallest building."
"Why?" As soon as he voiced the question, Helmuth felt its importance nestle into him. This young man had not judged him for his birth defect, had seemed to not even notice it. And now he spoke of a love of heights like Helmuth could only dream of. "To see the world in a different way," Frin said, and the breath rushed out of Helmuth, though he hadn't been aware he was holding it in so deeply. There was something different in the boy's eyes now. Gone was the light-hearted youthfulness that had seemed to follow this boy wherever he went, replaced by a shadow. It was gone in an instant. "Do you want to go?" Frin asked, the twinkle in his eyes having returned. "Go?" Surely he was misunderstanding. "To the top." He pointed up, and Helmuth followed his aim all the way to the clouds. He suddenly felt dizzy, beautifully, wonderfully dizzy, his heart seeming to flip within his chest. "I am allowed? Your ship arrived early. King Strait does not expect us to depart Moray until the morrow. I am trusted by the king, so I am given certain benefits. So, yes." Helmuth had so many questions about why he was here, and King Strait, and what was going to happen next, but he pushed, more like shoved, all of those away to consider later. "I want to go," he said. Then, remembering his manners, he added, "Please." "Good. So do I. Stop the carriage." It was a feeling unlike anything Helmuth had ever experienced. He could tell they were moving, climbing, the wooden walls, floor and ceiling shaking and juddering, but nothing about their tiny box changed. Pressure built in his ears and he swallowed to release it. It was madness. What if one of the ropes snapped? What if the wood cracked under the pressure of their ascent? What if... Only Helmuth didn't care about any of that. Already this was the best day of his life, and not by a small margin. "You might as well settle in. This will take a while," Frin said, grinning at him. Helmuth grinned back. It would take a while because they were climbing all the way to the clouds. No, above the clouds. Grinning at each other, they sat on opposite sides, on wooden seats affixed to the walls. Helmuth's fine new crutches rested on his lap. He was feeling bold, recklessly so. "Why don't you look at my legs?" he asked, his own gaze darting to the withered, spindly things he usually avoided talking about at all costs. Frin's eyes stayed level, not so much as fluttering. "They are just legs. I have seen many of them. But mine are different, useless." "Different, not useless. You can still use them to balance, no?" Helmuth had never considered that. Though his legs could not support his weight, they had enough strength to work with his crutches to allow him to remain upright at the least. He nodded. But nothing. Your perceived deficiency can be corrected with crutches. There are those who are born with worse. Deficiencies of the mind for which there are no crutches." It was a different perspective, and perhaps it should have made him feel better about himself. But it didn't. For whenever he felt the slightest ray of hope, a thousand voices assaulted him from the past, their screams obliterating all peace. "The maimed prince," he muttered. "What?" "Nothing. Just thank you. You are kinder than most I've encountered." A silence settled in after that, each lost in their own thoughts. Eventually, what felt like half a day later, the box jolted to a stop. Helmuth's eyes met Vryn's, and they both smiled. "Are you ready?" Frin said. "Yes. Oh, yes." Helmuth bit his bottom lip and nodded. Frin stood, unlocked the door with a small key, and dragged it open. What Helmuth saw stole his breath from his very lungs. The world was gone. The hustle and bustle of the largest port city in the world had disappeared beneath an endless carpet of fluffy white clouds that spread in every direction. The sun was pure and powerful, warming Helmuth's skin from head to curled toes. The sky was cerulean blue, unmarred by so much as a wispy cloud or the black speck of a bird. With nothing to stop it, the wind was a powerful force, billowing their clothes about them. If Helmuth hadn't already pinched himself, he might think he was in a dream. Vryn laughed, having noticed his gesture. It was worth the wait, no? Helmuth didn't have the words to respond to such a simple question, because the answer was too complex to fathom. He crouched forward to where an ornate metal railing surrounded the apex of what had to be the tallest building in the world. In fact, there was only one word he could think of to speak. Why? Though it wasn't the clearest question, Vryn seemed to immediately understand, gripping the railing between two white-knuckled hands. Because he could, he said, and there was grit in his tone, the honey richness gone. Who? Vryn swallowed, wincing slightly. King Strait. The man who saved me from a life of labor in Blackstone. The man who bought me. The thoughts were a stark reminder that he wasn't in control of his own fate, if he ever had been. It was a reminder that he was, by definition, a slave, even if he'd been treated well so far. He'd been treated almost like a prince, if he was being honest, which was more than he could say of his life in Castle Hill when he actually was a prince. Vryn turned toward him, and his eyes were no longer sharp, but as clear and blue as the sky above them. There was something wistful in his expression, almost lazy, like they could spend a decade up here and never grow bored. "Have you ever wished you could fly?" he asked. Helmer's heart stuttered. "Yes, every day of my life. I can't even walk. To dream of flying would be foolishness." "You don't need legs to fly," Vryn said, his words airy, though the air was thinner up here, each breath requiring more effort. "True, you need wings, which I am also sorely lacking." It was intended as a jape, but Vryn didn't so much as curl a lip, nodding seriously. "Or maybe you just need courage." "Again, lacking," Helmuth said, though that no longer felt true exactly. He hadn't quite admitted it to himself, but in his heart he knew running away from everything he'd ever known was a courageous act. Then again, he thought perhaps staying would have required even more courage. "What if we could fly?" Vryn said, again ignoring his attempt at light-hearted humour. Suddenly, nothing about this moment felt light-hearted or dreamy. There was something in the young boy's tone that scared Helmuth. A dark edge lined with the glittering silver of false hope. "What are you saying?" Vryn smiled, but it was a grim smile. He looked strangely resigned, like he'd come to a long-avoided conclusion. "Thank you." "For what?" "For being here with me. I've been here, alone, so many times. You've given me strength." "Strength for what?" Vryn looked away, staring out into a dizzying dream world, his teeth clenched. Without another word, he pushed up onto the railing and stood. Helmuth gaped at him. "What are you doing?" Vryn looked back at him quickly, and there was a strange peacefulness in his periwinkle eyes. "King Strait is not a good man," he said. And then he jumped. Helmuth's hands were trembling, and the only way to make them stop was to grip the railing as he lay in the fetal position, the wind washing over him, stealing his breath and using it to further strengthen its bluster. Vryn was gone. Gone. It was as if the boy had never existed, had been merely a figment of Helmuth's imagination. The space where Vryn had stood on the railing a moment before he'd jumped seemed to have a weight to it, as if it was permanently etched with a part of his soul. "King Strait is not a good man." His final words echoed in Helmuth's mind like a whispered curse. Helmuth jammed his eyes shut and tried to wish his way out of this dream-turned-nightmare. For surely he must be deeply asleep, still in his small cabin on the ship, the rocking of the waves as soothing as a lullaby. He hated knowing he was lying to himself. Hours passed. The sun fell from the sky. Slowly at first, but then quicker, not dissimilar to how Vryn had seemed to hang in the air for a moment, before his body had plummeted out of sight, sucked through the clouds like a stone through a straw. Darkness smothered the blue sky, the white clouds, the dying rays of the sun that had felt so perfect earlier that day. But the wind didn't die with the light, a relentless presence. At some point, Helmuth fell asleep, his dreams filled with true nightmares. He watched Vryn jump 1,000 times, 1,000,000. Only sometimes the boy didn't jump, he was pushed. Most of the time it was Helmuth who pushed him, his hands betraying his mind, which was screaming, "No, stop, please!" And other times it was a shadowy figure cloaked in mist. On the dark person's head a golden crown shone, sparkling with multifaceted gemstones. Helmuth tried to turn away, but the nightmare wouldn't allow it, forcing him to watch as Vryn died again and again and again. The shadow turned toward him, and its mouth opened, a dark, cavernous space that seemed to grow larger as it approached, winged demons flying from its maw. Fangs burst out, glistening with saliva, surrounding him like the iron bars of a dungeon cell. The mouth swallowed him whole. Helmuth jerked awake, his head smashing against the iron railing. The wind was gone, and the silence that lingered in its place was so absolute he almost wished the chill would return. A sound shattered the silence. A creak. A shudder. It was what must have saved him from the terror of the dream. A thudding sound drew his attention to the doorway he and Vryn had emerged from the day before. The door shook slightly, and then began to open. Two men appeared, wearing full plate, swords dangling from hip scabbards. Their helmets were adorned with green and black plumage. Royal Crimean soldiers, Helmuth thought. Shocked, his mind was still working at all. He didn't try to stand, for he didn't have the energy. They approached slowly, their eyes darting from side to side as if expecting an ambush. "Where is your escort?" one of them asked. "Where is Vryn?" Helmuth's lips trembled, his vision blurred. It was all he could do to lift a single hand, clenching each finger into his palm until only one remained. He pointed through the railing. "In the king's name," the other guard murmured. "He jumped." Helmuth wept. For though he'd only just met Vryn, he knew the boy might have been the first true friend he'd had in a long time. Maybe ever. Strong hands scooped him up and carried him into the small box. The rest of the day was like a dream in and of itself, his stomach dropping as the box fell lower and lower, his ears popping once, twice, thrice, as he imagined what Vryn would have seen as his body split the clouds, the entirety of Moray appearing in a rush of colour. Fear spreading through him, as he wondered what Vryn had felt in that moment, his own mortality drawing closer and closer. Did he feel at peace, or did he wish he'd made a different choice? A darker question tugged at Helmuth again and again, long after he'd been loaded into a carriage and departed the city of Moray, a city that no longer held the wonder it first did. What had King Strait done to Vryn to drive him to throw his body from the tallest structure in the world? 1 week later. Helmuth felt as if the shadows of his dreams were following him into the waking hours, where his time spent on the ocean and his entrance into Moray had seemed vibrant and full of colour. The further into Crimea they travelled, the greyer and darker the land became. The stony plains were full of boulder fields, plateaus, and canyons, each of which seemed determined to block their progress forward. The sun disappeared behind grey clouds, and after a week without its warmth and light, Helmuth was beginning to wonder whether he would ever see it again. He also wondered whether he wanted to. He was just chiding himself for being so negative when the earth shook. It wasn't the slight tremor caused by the gallop of horses or the crash of thunder, but a violent shaking of the earth, like a massive hand had reached out and grabbed it, drawing it back and forth, up and down. The horses pulling the carriage whinnied in fright as the vehicle ground to a halt. The beasts bucked and stamped, their masters trying fruitlessly to control them. Helmuth gripped the side of the carriage, peering out through the window. They'd just been rounding a large boulder field, and now, as he watched with wide eyes, portions of the largest boulder began to break away, chunks of rock clattering down the side and bouncing around the carriage, occasionally slamming into one of its large wooden wheels. The earth shook harder. Before Helmuth's very eyes, cracks appeared in the ground, spider-webbing outward in all directions. They widened into slits. His vision danced as the shaking intensified, and then there was a sharp cracking sound. An enormous portion of the boulder broke free and fell, hitting the ground with such force it crumbled into three smaller but still huge pieces, each tumbling in a different direction. And one of those directions was right toward the carriage. Helmuth knew this was the end. Either the ground would open into a chasm and swallow him whole, much as the Shadow King of his nightmares had done every night for the last week, or he would be crushed by a stone thrice his own size. Three things happened at the same moment. First, the earth stopped shaking, and the feeling left in the quake's wake was much like stepping onto solid land after weeks at sea. Second, the horses bolted, the carriage lurching into motion once more. Third, the chunk of boulder collided with the cart's rear wheel with such force that the entire vehicle fishtailed, rocking up onto two wheels. Helmuth felt his world turn sideways and then upside down, as momentum and the raw power of a world gone mad tipped the carriage over. Despite his efforts to brace himself, he was thrown into the air, landing hard on his shoulder, one of his crutches bludgeoning him on the forehead. He saw stars amidst the backdrop of the grey clouds. A thin layer of brown mist seemed to shroud his vision, and it took his muddled mind a few long moments to realize it was feather-light rock dust stirred up by the... He didn't even have a word for it. Whatever act of the gods had tried to shake their world to pieces.
"Are you hurt?" a voice asked.
Helmuth blinked. It was Krako, the soft-spoken man who worked for the king as a carriage driver to and from Moray. He was a thick-bodied man, whose head seemed to sit directly on his shoulders without a neck to connect the two. Thus far he'd been kind to Helmuth, though not particularly friendly, seeming content to do his job. The two guards who had first found Helmuth atop the building stood behind him. One of them was clutching his shoulder, which hung at an odd angle. The other was dabbing a cut beneath his left eye.
My head hurts, Helmuth said. But I am no worse for wear.
Good, Krako said. The king will have my hide if I lose two of his charges. Hell, he might have my hide for losing one.
You shouldn't have allowed Vryn to tarry in Moray,
one of the guards, the one with the bloody cheek, agreed.
He always wanted to go to the tops of those damned buildings,
Krako said, eyeing the guard warily.
How was I to know he'd do something mad this time?
It was an argument the two had had for days, and Helmuth was exhausted of it.
Because it was my fault. I was there. I could have stopped him, grabbed him, or said something to change his mind. Something.
He sat up, his head spinning. Dazed and confused, he allowed Krako to help him over to an overturned crate that had fallen from the carriage.
Rest. We'll have the carriage fixed in no time at all.
Which, as it turned out, meant the better part of a day. First, they helped the guard with the hurt arm. Krako held him still while the other guard wrenched his shoulder back into place. The man screamed, short and loud, but then went silent, gritting his teeth. He rested next to Helmuth, saying nothing. The other guard and Krako hitched the horses to the side of the carriage, and after much coaxing, prodding, and eventually the snap of a whip, the beasts managed to dig in and right the vehicle. Unfortunately, however, one of the large wheels was destroyed, several of its axles and part of its frame devastated by the stone. But Krako was a handy man, and simply opened a chest and withdrew several tools, getting to work with a grunt. By the time the sun began its descent, he had repaired the wheel enough that he was certain they could complete the journey to Rockland. Not wanting to distract the men from their work, Helmuth had withheld a dozen questions, but now that night had fallen and a cook fire was blazing, his lips opened in a deluge of inquiry.
What was that? How was it possible the entire earth could move like that? Is there a name for it? I thought the cracks would get bigger. Have they ever gotten bigger? Does that happen often?
Whoa! Slow down there, son,
Krako said, holding up the wooden spoon he was using to stir their supper. Helmuth clamped his mouth shut, surprised at himself. He was not prone to much speaking, but something about the way the earth had shook, or perhaps, he had to admit, it had been the blow to the head, had jarred something in him.
"Sorry," he muttered.
The soldiers ignored him entirely, looking grumpy.
"It's fine. One's first earthquake is often a shock. I'd be more concerned if it wasn't."
"An earthquake? Is that what it's called?" The name fit perfectly, Helmuth thought. Still, how is that possible? The man laughed.
"Some attribute it to the gods. Others say the first quakes didn't happen until the first King Strait sat on the Crimean throne. Now, whenever the current King Strait has indigestion, the earth shudders with his belching."
Craco laughed, and Helmuth couldn't hold back a smile. It was the most animated he'd seen the carriage driver. The soldiers, however, didn't look amused. Not that Craco seemed to care.
"I, for one, believe the scientists. Some have managed to drill deep into the earth, and they claim our world is built upon various plates. Sometimes those plates slip past each other, and the earth shakes."
Though such a thing seemed just as impossible as the other options, Helmuth preferred it to the quakes being caused by King Strait's burps. "King Strait is not a good man." Craco had continued speaking, and it took him a moment to catch back up.
"Happens several times a year, sometimes more. Most are small, like the one you just experienced."
Small? If that was a small quake, Helmuth couldn't imagine a big one.
"Every once in a while, however, there's a real quake, the kind that topples buildings."
The words conjured images in Helmuth's mind. He and Vryn hanging onto the railing of the tallest building in the world as it swayed from side to side. It cracked and started to fall. Vryn looked completely at peace, while Helmuth... "I don't want to die." The thought startled him. His life had never been good, never enjoyable. Though he had moments of happiness as a child, more often he'd found himself sad. Things had only gotten worse since he'd left Castle Hill, a truth that made him feel cold inside, pitiful. Still, despite all that, he yearned for a better life, one that he controlled, where those around him respected him. "King Strait is not a good man." He huffed out a breath, wishing they would just get to Rockland and be done with it.
Helmuth's wish was granted 3 days later, the repaired wheel holding up remarkably well against the rugged landscape. Each day the earth had shaken at some point, though never as strongly as the first time.
"Aftershocks," Craco called them. "Happens every time there's a quake. It's just the way the earth settles."
By the third tremor, Helmuth barely felt alarmed at the movement, his eyes fluttering open for a moment before returning to his nap. Rockland was more than just the name of the famed Crimean capital city. It was also a perfect, succinct description of the place, which was unlike anything Helmuth had ever seen before, a far cry from the towering buildings of Moray. The city was constructed within the largest boulder field yet, each massive stone outcropping bigger than the last. If not for the life burgeoning out from them, he might have believed these were the ancient ruins of a long-lost civilization. Stone bridges stretched between the boulders, supported by exquisitely carved stone columns. Each bridge was a riot of motion, carts being pulled across by enormous beasts with long, flat heads that ended in single, curving spikes that protruded from their snouts. "Mongol beasts," Helmuth thought in wonder. Though he'd never seen one in person, he'd read of them in his history books. During both wars for independence, the Crimeans had brought herds of these creatures across the Great Sea, riding them into battle like one might fight atop a horse.
"They don't have those in Blackstone, do they, boy?"
Craco said, grinning from ear to ear. Helmuth shook his head absently. "No wonder the columns are so thick. They were supporting an immense weight." Beneath the stone bridges was even more activity, the city alive with it, Crimeans coming and going, busily attending the markets, procuring everything from foodstuffs to massive saddles that must have been meant for Mongol beasts, to strange-coloured potions and elixirs from an apothecary tent. And everywhere, rocks. They were piled high on wheelbarrows, being sifted by beggars edging the thoroughfare, played with by groups of children who hopped over them in some sort of convoluted pattern Helmuth couldn't discern. The rocks reminded him of how snow was treated in the north. Common, but not without value. Craco steered the carriage into the throng, and Helmuth was surprised at how a wide avenue opened for them, as naturally as water diverting around a stone in a fast-moving river. As he peered through the window, hundreds of sets of eyes stared back at him. Blushing furiously, he slumped back inside the wagon. He had known the feel of eyes on him before, judging. That had been his life back in Castle Hill. That had been one of a list of reasons why he'd left. But he hadn't felt this way in a long time. In Blackstone, he'd been just another beggar. Then he was a slave, no more interesting than the other boys, until he'd felt that strangely dark power radiating from his chest. On the ship, none of the Crimeans had given him a second glance, almost as if they'd been instructed to treat him normally. But now he was like an interesting bug trapped in a glass jar, peered at by hundreds of eyes.
"Don't mind them," Craco called back. "They are only interested because they know this carriage."
The king's carriage, Helmuth thought, plunged back into reality with the force of a slap. He refused to think of the words Vryn had said, his last words. Anyways, he didn't need to think them, to remember them. They were ingrained in his mind like a tattoo on his brain. It wasn't embarrassment that swarmed him now, the hot blush fading from his cheeks, replaced by another feeling, colder than ice. Dread. Helmuth hated this feeling of helplessness, for he'd felt it most of his life. The only time he'd managed to cast it aside was when he'd left Castle Hill. In Blackstone, it was better for a time, and though he depended on the generosity of strangers, at least he chose when and where to beg for his coin. But now it was back, leaving him feeling like an empty husk, hollowed out of everything that made a person a person. "I don't want to go back to Castle Hill," he thought. Naturally, he knew, this was a time when one wished for home, but he didn't. No, wherever he was going could be no worse than his life in Castle Hill. Still, he longed to return to those days on the streets of Blackstone. He would take the harsh cold over the icy fear now settling deep in his marrow. He took a deep breath, then another, pushing the air out between narrow lips. He was halfway around the world, something he knew he needed to remember. Even if the winds of fate had helped blow him here, he had made it, and that was an accomplishment in and of itself. No one, not his fathers or brothers, or even Zelda, would believe it. With that thought in his mind, he firmed up his chin, turned to the side, and stared at those staring at him. One by one, their gazes faltered, until they looked away, no longer interested. He almost laughed, wondering whether a bug in a jar had ever tried such a trick. "I am not helpless," he thought. They were in the thick of the boulder field now, and much of the sky was eclipsed by the massive rock formations. The buildings were built between the rocks, also constructed of stone, almost like camouflage. They were sturdy-looking, with thick walls and heavy doors and no windows. "Because of the earthquakes," he thought, just as he noticed several large cracks running through the stone walls of one such structure. Darkly, he wondered whether the buildings ever collapsed on those living inside. He also wondered why the most powerful ruling family in the world had made this their capital city when they could live anywhere. Hours later, they finally reached their destination, the boulder field culminating in the largest rock structure of them all, which would be better characterized as a bulging cliff. Built within its shadow, attached directly to the face of the rock, was a castle, at least twice the size of the Garrick stronghold. Helmuth gaped as they rode through a high, wide gate cut through a boulder. Beyond, the castle's numerous towers crawled up the sides of the cliff face like enormous chimneys. The parapets touched the mammoth boulder on each end, curving around a broad area the size of the entirety of Castle Hill, before reconnecting with the opposite side of the cliffs. Within the walls were dozens of other smaller boulders, each a part of the castle, like they'd grown there, much like a tree might. The boulders were linked by broad bridges and ramparts. Everywhere Helmuth looked were the alternating colors of green, black, and silver. Soldiers, patrolling, marching, training, riding Mongol beasts, There were hundreds, and this was just King Strait's personal security force. His army would be many hundreds of times this size.
The largest army in the world,
Helmuth's father had once called it. His father had also said that if Crimea was not separated from the Four Kingdoms by miles of ocean, that King Strait would have retaken their land centuries ago. At the time, Helmuth hadn't thought much of it, but now he understood the truth of those words. The carriage followed a roundabout path along the inner edge of the wall, skirting several boulders before angling back towards centre, where the path descended a slope that was eventually swallowed up by a cavern cut into a boulder. Helmuth blinked, his eyes trying to adjust to the sudden darkness after the brightness of the day. Balls of flame appeared on either side, casting orange cones across the pathway. It smelled damp and earthy, the air several degrees cooler underground. Still the trail descended, and Helmuth started to wonder whether he would ever emerge from this place of darkness and shadows. And then they did. Helmuth frowned, trying to understand what he was seeing. They were still within the bounds of the cave, every direction except forward and back, blocked by grey stone walls, and yet light poured in from above. Not torchlight, real light, sunlight. Krakow brought the carriage to a stop, dismounting. The two soldiers dropped from their mounts as well, one opening the door for Helmuth while the other stood sentinel, at attention. Carefully, Helmuth clambered out, using one crutch to support himself and dragging the other behind him. On solid ground, Helmuth took in his surroundings. He followed the high walls to a wide, circular opening excavated through the boulder itself, much like the tunnel had been built. Sunlight streamed in through the gap. It would have taken decades to burrow such a space. The cavernous area was a marvel on its own, large enough to swallow his father's throne room several times over. And in the centre sat a natural stone platform. And on the platform rested a giant stone seat, carved from the boulder itself. And in the seat, no, the throne, rested a figure, his hands clasped casually in his lap.
"Ah, you have arrived," King Strait said.
Helmuth froze, his mouth going dry. His crutches suddenly felt like glowing beacons, and he had the urge to throw them aside and stand on his own two feet. Unfortunately, such a thing wasn't just foolish. It was impossible. The king stood. He was a tall man, at least a head taller than Helmuth. He would have had a finger or two on King Garrick as well, Helmuth suspected. His hair was jet black, finely combed with a thin part off-center. His eyes were as dark as his hair, but shone with a light that spoke of certainty and strength. "This man is fearless," Helmuth thought, "as certain of victory as his enemies are of defeat. No wonder he has conquered the world." The king stepped forward, loosely dropping from the platform. His jaw was clean-shaven, but in the center of his chin was a thin strip of black hair, curving outward on either side to surround his lips, connecting beneath his nose. Helmuth had the strange suspicion that not a single hair was out of place on this entire man's body. The king stopped, not frowning so much as his facial muscles tensing as one. Only the slight narrowing of his eyes gave away the change in his mood.
"Where is Vryn?" he asked,
his eyes flicking to Krakow.
"He..."
Krakow seemed to struggle to describe what had happened, though he'd had the entirety of the long trip to choose his words. Even years after, Helmuth couldn't determine why he decided that now was a good time to speak up. Perhaps it was how much he'd grown to enjoy Vryn's company in the few short hours that he knew him. Or perhaps it was just a random impulse because of what he'd witnessed atop the tallest tower in the world. Whatever the case, he blurted out, "He jumped to his death." The king's eyes landed back on him hard, and it took all his focus not to look away from their scrutiny.
"You witnessed this."
He'd used up all his courage, so he was only able to nod.
"Did he say anything to you?"
Helmuth sensed this man was never lied to, that even if he was, he would know. But could he really tell him the truth? "Many things," Helmuth hedged, and was surprised his voice didn't falter. "I've travelled halfway around the world," he repeated in his mind, and the statement seemed to give him strength. such as. Helmuth remembered the lightness in Vryn's spirit, the way his grin had seemed to have an infinite number of shapes and sizes, like a kaleidoscope of mirth. He hadn't truly seen darkness in the boy until